This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Well, it's dreary November. It's way too soon for the religious right's use of Christmas as a war on freethinkers and a war on the separation of state and church, but it's starting already. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll talk about that and more on today's Free Thought Radio. Coming up, slightly irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. Yes, this week we had our first snowfall of the season here in mid-November. But preceding that, I mean, I think it was right after Halloween that we saw all these Christmas things going up in the stores. And my goodness, it's getting earlier and earlier. Or I guess we should say holiday decorations going up in the stores. And as you pointed out, it's not a war on Christmas that's happening. It's a war by the religious right on our secular nation, our secular constitution with state and church separation.
Free Thought Radio is broadcasting from the Mic 92.1 in Madison, Wisconsin. And we're streaming from this station and broadcasting also in Atlanta, Grand Rapids, Monterey, New York City, and podcasting everywhere.
And this is the weekend of November the 12th, 2011. The Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We are the largest organization in the country of atheists and agnostics. We surpassed 17,500 members. We have members in every state and some foreign countries, especially in Canada.
And every province in Canada.
Every province in Canada. And we do two things. We work diligently to keep state and religion separate, the government and religion separate. And we do that through many different activities we've talked about on this radio show, all the way from letters of complaint to lawsuits, all the way to suing the President of the United States. The second thing we do is educate the public about the views of non-theists. Are we going to talk about our Phoenix
thing
today?
Well, we're going to be talking about the views of, no, that'll be next week,
next
Dan.
Week, all right.
We're going to be talking about the views of non-theists with our returning guest on today's show, who will be Professor Phil Zuckerman.
You might remember we interviewed Phil in the past.
Oh, excuse me, Zuckerman.
Zuckerman. Zuckerman's famous book. We interviewed him in the past, and we talked about the exciting news that now Claremont College, which is part of Pitzer University, where he's a professor, is now offering a secular studies major. But as promised from the last interview with him, we're going to talk with Phil Zuckerman today about his off-the-press new book, just published.
His hot-off-the-press new book.
Yeah, hot-off-the-press. Actually, it has a 2012 publication date, so it's really, really off-the-press. The book is called Faith No More. And no, it's not a book about the rock band called Faith No More. Faith No More, Why People Reject Religion. He's a sociologist, and he's interviewed a lot of people. So stay tuned for an exciting interview about why people lose or give up their faith.
And now there's a whole lot of news going on.
Well, I think some of the most ridiculous of the current news, which is really close to home for us, that is Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's really momentous announcement that he has taken urgently needed intervention to, guess what? Well, why don't we listen to this TV broadcast, which ran earlier this week, by Andy Choi out of CBS Madison, Wisconsin.
Next at 6, tis the season for some festive debate over what to call that annual tree at the Capitol.
News 3's Andy Choi joins us with details on Governor Walker's announcement, Andy.
Season's greetings, guys. It's a 30-foot display that brings together the joys of the season, and Governor Walker says this year the Capitol's tree could use a little more Christmas in its name.
thinking of it was always the Christmas tree in my house. Like most houses around the country and around the state, it's been a Christmas tree.
Governor Scott Walker may have kicked off the winter season with some festive debate. Is this coniferous decoration device inside the Capitol a holiday tree or a Christmas tree?
It is a Christmas tree. I firmly believe that, to put Christ back in Christmas.
If they want to have a Christmas tree at home, that's fine. If they want to have it at their workplace, I guess that's fine. But this government represents all people.
The state has called the yearly evergreen a holiday tree since the mid-1980s. And for years, the Capitol decorations have included symbols of non-Christian faith, including this sign celebrating the winter solstice.
If it's a symbol of our holiday season, then what was wrong with calling it a holiday tree? Government just shouldn't be involved in religion, and it should be inclusive. It shouldn't make statements that would make outsiders of Jews or non-Christians in December.
We light a menorah candle with our friends in the Jewish faith tradition, so this is not about establishing a state religion or anything in that regard. It just simply put, it's a Christmas tree.
Back in 2007, the Assembly successfully passed a measure to change the name to a Christmas tree, but it failed to make it out of the Senate.
The debate seems like it itself is becoming a tradition every year.
We talk about this.
Andy, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. That was Annie Laurie being interviewed by News 3 at CBS Madison, Wisconsin, talking about it. And this isn't an issue that we brought up. The governor brought it up. I moved to Madison in 1985, and ever since I've been here, it's been called a holiday
that
tree.
That was thanks to Governor, then-Governor Tony Earl, who was trying to be more inclusive. And actually, there was a lawsuit by the ACLU over the presence of the tree in the menorah. That was never involving FFRF, but we had a big sign. We had a permit for a banner saying state church, keep them separate. And Governor Tommy Thompson had it ripped down, even though we had a permit, and then said, you can only put 30 by 30-inch signs in the Capitol. That doesn't include the menorah or the tree, of course. And so we have put up our sign every year as a protest.
How many years now? 15 years, is it?
Well,
it's been about.
I'm going to have
years.
To research that. I think it's about 15 years. And it says, at this season of the winter solstice, may reason prevail. This is the wording of my mother, Anne Gaylor. There are no gods, no devils, no angels, no heaven or hell. There is only our natural world. Religion is but myth and superstition that hardens hearts and enslaves minds.
Yeah, and that's been something.
And on the other side, we have this little sign saying, thou shalt not steal.
And keep state church separate.
Well, actually, we've changed it. We now have the poem by Ella Wheeler Wilcox.
On the other side.
Who was a famous poet in her day from Wisconsin, The World's Need. So many gods,
so many creeds, so many paths
that wind and wind. When just the art
of being kind
is
all
this sad world
needs.
Yeah. Very sweet words. So we have sort of gentle message, and then we have the more upfront, if you're going to put theology in the Capitol, you're going to have religion, which is throughout the whole month in terms of the choirs and the other signs against us, then we're going to have our point of view there too.
So our little sign's going up in a couple of weeks.
Well, I've asked for the permit, and we don't think our sign should be there. We don't think that the Capitol should be a public forum for religion. It's divisive. But if there's going to be religion, we'll be there too.
Some years, that sign has been viewed as something of a tourist attraction. People from buses from Indiana stop to get their pictures taken with the atheist winter solstice sign.
Yeah, it's a very pretty little sign.
Now, there's further developments in Montana. You might recall the hate mail to the Freedom From Religion Foundation that I read over the air last week that was mostly comprised of expletives deleted. Well, it's still coming in, and things are getting really outrageous with Congressman Denny Rehberg of Montana making political hay over the decision by the Forest Service following an FFRF request not to renew an unconstitutional 10-year lease to the Catholic Knights of Columbus, which allows them to use federal land on Big Mountain in Montana to display what we think is a really tacky-looking. Have you ever seen a tasteful Jesus statue? A tacky-looking Jesus statue.
Well, I think, yes, Michelangelo's or the La Pietà.
Okay.
This ain't one of those. It's concrete made out of a mold.
Well, this thing comes from a real mold, Knights of Columbus mold. And Congressman Rehberg, as you may recall, started a group that he calls VeteransJesus.com that actually just takes you to his congressional website. And this week, or last week, they were holding a rally for the Christian veterans.
That was on Thursday. Because Veterans Day was yesterday. And some of our members were hopefully counter-rallying, but the the ridiculous part of this development is that Rehberg drafted a bill this week and launched it to trade some of the federal land, a little bite, 625 square feet of federal property on which the Jesus Shrine currently sits, to trade it for private property by a resort company. This is on a hill, on a mountain, where there's a ski lift, and there's a resort at the top, and the resort is also leasing some of the federal land, but owns some private land as well. So this is ridiculous. Why don't they move the Jesus Shrine to the private property on top of the hill? It would be more prominent. They could do what they want with it. The resort owner could do whatever he likes. I mean, it's just preposterous. So
now I don't believe in prayer, but I'm just saying, wouldn't it be something if, because of global warming, maybe an avalanche would kind of fall against that thing?
Well, people are constantly running into it, and they also are constantly on purpose running into it so the hands fall off.
So people can comment now? Can some of our listeners comment?
The Forest Service was delaying, had said it will remove the shrine, will not renew the lease, and then Rehberg made a big fuss. So now they're having an official public comment period that goes through December 8th. And so we do urge the listeners of Free Thought Radio to chime in. If you live in the United States, if you're an American citizen, you own that federal land just as much as anyone in Montana. And so you have a right to comment. It's a little bit complicated how you do get to their comment section. So we would urge you to go to ffrf.org, our website, and look for the news link at the top where all the links are, and then scroll down to either the news releases or action alerts, and you'll find details about how you can quickly email the U.S. Forest Service to say you should not renew the lease, federal property should not be leased for the benefit of a Roman Catholic men's club.
Now, it's not just Congressman Rehberg. Also making hay over this silly issue is the legal arm of televangelist Pat Robertson. They're always attacking us. They're always attacking the Freedom From Religion Foundation and using us to raise money by scaring their constituents with what a horrible group FFRF is. And we happen to find an ad produced by the ACLJ using us as a foil, basically. Listen to this. This is an ACLJ ad about this Montana Jesus Shrine. We thought you would get a kick out of this.
You know their tactics. They targeted the National Day of Prayer, the Pledge of Allegiance, and even our national motto. The Freedom From Religion Foundation, an atheist, anti-Christian group, now has its sights set on removing a significant piece of the history and heritage of Montana. In the 1950s, World War II veterans from the Knights of Columbus put up a statue of Jesus at the Whitefish Mountain Resort. Now the atheist group wants it removed, saying the display is, quote, a ruse and a sham, and calling on the Forest Service to end a long-standing lease that would force the 56-year-old display to go. The ACLJ is taking a stand, fighting to keep this display in place. Stand with the ACLJ and sign on to our letter to the Forest Service demanding that the lease be renewed. We've met these outrageous anti-Christian challenges before, and now we'll do it again.
Makes this sound really important.
All that music going on.
What would they do without us? My gosh.
Of course, it's a federal issue. It wasn't just Montana. Us invading Montana.
Nor is it a war memorial. This is ridiculous. The Knights of Columbus put it up in 55 because some of the returning Catholic men at Kalispell saw Jesus statues in the Alps, and they thought that was nice. This isn't a war memorial that would include anybody except a few Roman Catholic men from that town in Montana.
And also, the Forest Service had decided already to remove it before we even got involved. So it wasn't like we were scouting the country trying to get rid of religious symbols.
Coming up in a minute, we'll play a clip from The Daily Show poking fun at the U.S. House's action 2 weeks ago to reaffirm that In God We Trust is the nation's motto, then speak with educator and author Phil Zuckerman on why so many people have faith no more in religion.
Hi, my name is Ann O'Day, and I'm from Mundelein, Illinois, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We spent a bit of time last week talking about the hollow vote of Congress on November 1st to reaffirm In God We Trust as the national motto. And as we like to say at FFRF, in order for it to be accurate, it would have to say In God Some of Us Trust. And wouldn't that be silly? Now, I debated Congressman Dan Lundgren on National Fox TV last Sunday, and something went wrong with my recording. So if anybody has it, send it to info@fffref.org and we'll play it on the air. But we have something else instead.
We really enjoyed The Daily Show's take on this In God We Trust vote. It's so much that we're going to play an excerpt of Jon Stewart's comments about this coverage.
Americans have a lot on their minds right now. People are talking about interests, hobbies, about whether or not teen heartthrob Justin Bieber knocked up a lady in a bathroom. But the truth is, we shouldn't be talking about any of that.
We should be talking about jobs.
Let's talk about creating jobs.
Why aren't we trying to create jobs?
Jobs.
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 Let's see you guys put the money we're not making where your mouths are.
Mr. Speaker, pursuant to House Resolution 375, I move to suspend the rules and agree to House Concurrent Resolution 13, reaffirming In God We Trust as the official motto of the United States.
Seriously? Floor of the Congress are debating the motto of the United States. Sacred part of our national heritage, ever since our founding fathers created our motto back in 1956. All right. As far as I know, no legislators are actually calling for the motto to be changed. So why are we doing this?
This was a priority because the president himself had stated incorrectly that the motto of the country was E Pluribus Unum. We thought we'd remind him.
Oh, so you're doing it to be dicks. Although, let me guess, that is not actually the main argument that you're making on the House floor.
If we answer the question the other way, Mr. Chairman, if man is God, then an atheist state is as brutal as the thesis that it rests upon, and there is no longer any reason for us to gather here in this place. We should just let anarchy prevail, because after all, we are just worm food.
I guess what I'm saying here, Mr. Speaker, is that this four-word motto is right now the only thing standing between me and a nihilistic killing spree of epic proportion. Seriously, I just want to state for the congressional record, I do not know right from wrong. I'm like that guy in No Country for Old Men. I just got to check the coin and just, in God we trust, or should I kill this mother? I just don't know. I don't know.
I reluctantly supported it because I didn't want anyone to believe that I didn't trust God.
It's what you believe I believe. In fact,
I honestly don't know how Charlie Rangel still has a throat. In the end, the bill passed 396-9, reaffirming our motto.
It's kind of sad, actually, I think, that the House actually has to vote on this. But they do. It's crazy that even, as Ryan says, that even have to have a vote on this. But that's the era that we live in.
They didn't have to vote on it. The motto was under no threat. Your guys brought it up. And even in this new godless era, it passed with 97% support. The Last Supper had a higher percentage of dissent.
Well, that's a chuckle, but it is kind of sad when they promised, the leadership promised not to entertain anything except substantive. Obviously, this was political grandstanding. And E Pluribus Unum is, too, the national motto. It was chosen by Benjamin Franklin, Jefferson, and Adams. It's on our great seal. It's on our money. It's there along with In God We Trust, the interloper that Johnny Come Lately adopted at the height of the McCarthy era. And so... But very entertaining commentary.
Randy Forbes, who introduced it, and we heard Charlie Rangel and Senator, Congressman from California and from Arizona, saying that without, in an atheistic universe, what kind of a horrible country would this be?
But I thought that one admission, very poignant, I don't want to be seen as voting against God. It's a gotcha issue. It's a religious litmus test for public office.
Okay, here's some music by Aaron Copland. It's his birthday this week, November the 14th. He was born in 1900, a non-religious composer. This is a little bit of his Prairie Journal.
And who's coming up?
Phil Zuckerman, after the break, will talk about his new book, Faith No More, Why People Reject Religion.
I'm Annie Laurie Geller.
I'm Dan Barker.
We'll
stay
tuned.
We'll
be right back.
Hi, my name's Bob Sarufka from Chicago, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. At the end of our show today, listen to the outro music. It's a little bit from the rock band Faith No More. But we're going to talk about a different Faith No More.
Oh, Phil Zuckerman, professor of sociology at Pitzer College.
Or Zuckerman, is it? Or
I'm sorry, Phil. I keep mispronouncing your name. Phil
That's
Zuckerman.
All right. It rhymes with luck, duck, and other things.
Okay, right. You told us that last time.
Professor of sociology at Pitzer, which is in California, is author of many books, but we're having him on the show to talk about his hot-off-the-press book, Faith No More, Why People Reject Religion. And he's also written Society Without God, What the Least Religious Nations Can Tell Us About Contentment, Atheism, and Secularity.
We talked about that book on an earlier show.
Yes.
His concentration on Scandinavia, Denmark, and all those countries.
And I believe, Phil, did you coin the word secularity?
You
popularized
it. I think so. I know that probably that would be very I don't know. I like the word secularity. I use a lot, but
yeah,
I don't think I came up with it.
Well, you're popularizing it. And,
yeah.
Of course, Phil addressed the 2009 FFRF convention in Seattle with a speech called The Goodness of Godlessness. And you can actually go to our website to read that. It was the March 2010 issue of Free Thought Today. We have the archives up. And we're delighted to have you back on the show, Phil.
Oh, it's my pleasure and my honor.
Well, you've been really a busy boy these days with your new... Well, we talked a few weeks ago about your new Department of Secularism. Is that what you call it?
Department of Secular Studies.
Department of Secular Studies. And how's that going?
So far, so good. It's still the first semester, so I'm having some students trickling in. I hope the trickle becomes a bit more of a downpour with the new batch of students that come next year. So, new courses are being thrown about as potential offerings, so we'll see how. I'm trying to get grants right now, and so, yeah, things are coming along.
Well, if I were a student, I'd sure want to major in that.
Oh, thanks, Annie.
That would have been such a nice choice.
Yeah.
Well, we have people that work for us who have majors in women's studies and in LGBT studies. And so why not secular
That's right.
studies? It's an important part of our culture.
I totally agree.
So tell us about this new book. We just got a copy. In fact, it has a 2012 publication date on it. So this is pretty...
Yep, it just came out. It is available on Amazon, but I only just got my personal copy just about 2 weeks ago in the mail as well.
Wow.
It's basically, you know, what I saw, what everybody knows, is that we've seen this huge increase in irreligion or secularity, people rejecting religion in the last 25 years. Enormous. The numbers are staggering, and everybody's talking about it. But what I also knew is that secular people tend to not have a lot of kids. In fact, religious fundamentalists have the most children. So I knew this wasn't just a demographic thing. It wasn't like, you know, secular people were outbreeding religious people. In fact, what's actually happening is people are rejecting religion. Most Americans today who are non-religious were raised in religious homes of varying degrees. So the real story to me was, in this growth of irreligion that we're seeing in America, it's really people walking away from faith, saying, I don't believe this anymore, I don't want to participate anymore, and I wanted to understand that process. I wanted to understand, how does that work? How do people who, I was raised a non-believer. I'm a third-generation non-believer,
Me
so
too.
I don't know what that means to, what does it mean to grow up believing, praying, accepting this stuff, and then at some point, saying, actually, this doesn't make sense, and it's, I'm not interested. And of course, I've read Dan's wonderful book, Godless, and I've read other works by people who have written about their own journeys in losing their faith. But, you know, these were sort of autobiographies, and I wanted to try and do an analysis, more of a sort of sociological, scholarly look. So I started interviewing people. I started interviewing former Christians, former Catholics, former Jews, former Muslims here in America, basically trying to get the story direct from the horse's mouth and seeing what I could find. So I interviewed about 90 American apostates, people that were religious but are no more. And what I discovered from those interviews is the content of this new book.
That's what I like about your work, Phil. You're not just in an ivory tower reading the journals and making hypotheses and giving lectures. You're actually out on the street. Well, your previous book, you actually went to the Danes and talked to them face-to-face and did interviews and took notes, and you did a real study. So do you think this is like the first real systematic study of apostates in America?
Absolutely. Of this type. It's the first sort of book-length sociological investigation and analysis in a sort of scholarly way. Now, there had been previous studies that usually they were surveys, and usually they were administered to, you know, undergraduates and psych classes. That's, you know, where most studies find their data. You know, professors give their surveys to their own students and have them hand them back. And, of course, the survey data, there had been some, actually, there was a book published in the 70s, I take that back, it was called The Religious Dropouts by Kaplowitz and Sherrow. Was the first book-length study, but it was all based on survey data, survey data, survey data, survey data. And again, I don't mind survey data. In fact, I rely on it. But what survey doesn't tell you is the deeper stories. It's people filling in boxes, filling in bubbles, and you get very kind of rudimentary, kind of basic information, but you don't get the details, the depth. And to me, apostasy really is a story. There's a dynamic, you know, there's a before period, a during period, an after period, and I really wanted to capture those stories. And I think that's the greatest value of what I try to do in my work.
So this is like the Kinsey Report of apostasy.
I wish. I mean, I'm not nearly as wide and thorough as Kinsey's work, but obviously I would aspire to that type of research.
Well, the first chapter, I haven't read it yet because it is so new, Phil. But I am intrigued by the chapter title, Mother Was an Exorcist.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, it was so stunning that the stories I heard, you know, when you're not raised with religion, you have a certain idea of what it's like or what it's about, but you really need to talk to people to hear the sort of details of what it was like. And that chapter is based on two brothers who were raised in California roughly around my age, who, you know, while I was living on the west side of Los Angeles, you know, having no thoughts of hell or Satan or anything, these two brothers were living in a home where their mother was a professional exorcist who was performing exorcisms on a weekly basis for various churches in the area. And they were homeschooled. They were told the world was going to end before they got to high school. I mean, a really extreme Christian fundamentalist upbringing, the likes of which I think most Americans are unaware, other than the ones that were raised in it, don't really realize the depth of what their beliefs were, how strong they were, and how scary they were. And so, in fact, these two brothers were strong believers. They themselves grew up to perform exorcisms, and yet by the time they were both 25, they were both, if not atheists, because they don't like the term, that non-believers, not believing in Christianity, not believing in God, not believing in the Bible. And I felt like their story was so dramatic and encapsulated so much of what I was trying to do with this book that I put that as the first chapter and kind
so
of going
she
through
really,
their journey.
She really was an exorcist.
Indeed.
And what denomination? Yeah.
They were non-denominational Bible-believing Christians, and involved something called Deliverance Ministries. And,
I know people like that. I know a whole bunch of people in that subset of the Christian world.
We had an exorcist death in Milwaukee at one of those non-denominational churches. A little boy
was suffocated.
Wow. Yes,
yeah,
very dangerous pastime.
Squeeze the devil out of him, and he suffocated.
I think he was autistic. You know, it was
so
tragic.
Sad.
But now,
so sad.
To make it cheerier, you said meanwhile, you had this secular childhood, and I think we should tell our listeners, remind them that who your mother was.
Oh, you've de- sense of deep investigative journalism, Annie. Did I tell you that?
Well, not for a while, so tell our listeners.
Yeah, my mom, let's see, how can I say this? My grandparents were refugees from Europe. They escaped the Holocaust very late. They came over just in the nick of time, and my grandfather was a writer. And they came to Los Angeles, and my mother in the 1950s started going to Malibu with them, and she noticed a bunch of beach bums, cute boys on the beach, and she started surfing with them and telling her dad about these great guys that all had nicknames, and then they started to call her Gidget because she was a girl and she was very small, and it was a conflation of girl and midget, Gidget. And he thought, wow, this is great. So in 6 weeks, he wrote a book called Gidget about my mom's adventures surfing in Malibu. And of course, it became a bestseller and an American icon.
So you could write a book saying my mother was Gidget.
Was it
the son of Gidget?
Was it a movie too? Wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah. The book. There were several books, and then Sandra Dee starred, and Cliff Robertson starred, and James Darren starred in the first movie, Gidget. And then there were sequels to that. It was Gidget Goes to Rome, Gidget Gets Married, blah, blah, blah.
Now, I was going to ask if you're still picking sand out of your hair, but of course, I don't think you had any hair last time I saw you.
I've lost a lot of my hair.
Well, Dan, too. That's why he can make that joke. That was quite a digression, but...
Yeah.
I just had to bring us to cheerier waters there.
You bet. So, well, I mean, it is actually interesting. I'm happy to talk about that. I mean, my parents were both not religious, but in very different ways. You know, my dad was sort of a self-declared atheist who had very good reasons for why he didn't believe, whereas my mom, Gidget, was actually just kind of oblivious to religious matters. She was more interested in the beach and surfing and still is today. And I think and I always tell people that, you know, secularity comes in a lot of shades and that it's not always just a rejection of something. It's sometimes just an obliviousness. And I think I try to capture that in my book as well, that not everybody who rejects religion ends up in the same secular place. For some people, they walk away and they never give it another thought. Others, of course, become quite anti-religious and they spend a lot of time fighting against what they see as religious evil or religious, the good, bad things, that religious malfeasance. And so there really is a wide swath of where apostates end up.
Well, before we go to a break, what are some of the findings that are in your book?
Yeah, so basically what I heard, you know, in hearing 90 people tell why they lost their faith, obviously I heard 90 different stories, and each with many different reasons. My ultimate theory is that it's a combination of personal, almost psychological predisposition, and then sort of experiences one has later in life that I call sort of personal secularizing catalysts, things that trigger a loss of faith, or at least trigger people going down the road. And it can be anything from... simply going to college. A lot of people talked about education. A lot of people talked about personal misfortune, death of a parent, a divorce that starts getting them to question. For some people, it's learning about other religions that gets them to question the truth of their own. For many people, it's friends, colleagues, lovers. I mean, I have a long, I could go on and on. Some people had to do with issues around sex and sexuality, hypocrisy of religious leaders. But what seemed to be the general pattern was, it was a long process. People usually started to peel back the layers, and it took quite a while to finally come to recognizing that they were godless. And it usually was never one single thing, but several things that accumulated. It's hard to give a simple answer. It was actually, I think that was one of the biggest challenges for me, was to try and listen to all these stories and see what patterns did emerge. And so what I was able to do was kind of outline about 8 or 9 of the most common reasons, but trying to argue that they in and of themselves aren't, the only reason.
Well, we'll talk about some of those reasons, though, when we get back. We're going to take a break. We're talking with Phil Zuckerman about Faith No More. I'm Annie Laura Gaylor here with Dan Barker on Free Thought Radio.
My name is Bruce Wakeland. I'm from Culver, Indiana, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laura Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker, and we're continuing our conversation with Phil Zuckerman, professor of sociology and author, whose newest book, which is hot off the press, is called Faith No More, Why People Reject Religion. And we're going to ask you, Phil, about some of those reasons. We did a survey of our members a few years ago asking why they rejected, if they were raised religious, about 85% were raised religious and the other 15 were not. And the primary reason was intellectual. It just didn't make sense. But some of them gave emotional or political or social, like the church's treatment of women. Some of them, they gave all sorts of reasons, but primarily it was in the end that it just didn't make sense. What were some of your findings?
I certainly got a lot of that. I mean, if you ask, like in your survey, I mean, when you ask people, why are you no longer religious? Why did you reject religious? I mean, the first thing they will say is it just no longer made sense. In fact, I have a chapter called Stopped Making Sense, where I just, you know, acknowledge that most people start to have intellectual or scientific or moral problems with the whole God concept. But I tried to dig deeper, and that's one of the things about getting people's life stories is they may bring up things that they don't see as important, but, you know, me as the listener and the observer start to see the pattern. And I'll give you an example. Number one is that over half of the people I talked to described at least one of their parents as not being totally sold. Now, but the, you know, of varying degrees. So they might have, you know, a really committed mother and maybe kind of a Homer Simpson dad who, you know, goes along to church but doesn't really want to. And the kids can kind of pick up on that. And again, sometimes you'd have the out-and-out atheist. You might have, you know, dad's a strong believer, mom rejects it. But more often than not, it was just simply that one parent was a little bit less than enthusiastic. So, and the kids so pick up on that.
Phil, just to interrupt, we found that true to be true as well, about 17.5% of... Okay. No, a quarter of our members came from a mixed home. So cognitive dissonance, I think,
exactly,
plays a big role.
Well, so they have, like, it's like they have permission to think.
You bet. I think there's a whole bunch of, you know, in the socialization process, they learn that that's an option. There's permission. There's a whole bunch of, you know, it's a lot there to unpack. And the next thing that people often talked about is that their questioning usually started when they started going to college, often community college. I interviewed a lot of people who struggled in life, people who struggled with drugs, who were in jail, et cetera, but they were motivated to improve themselves, and they started taking classes. And sometimes a class in history or even religious studies or sociology or psychology would just really get them to look at things more critically, which would sort of start the yarn unraveling. And then third, of course, that people often, I often noticed that they experienced some personal misfortune, either a death of a spouse, even the loss of a beloved pet. I mean, a lot of people found their prayers were not being answered. They had been taught when life gets rough, you know, God will answer your prayers. And so when life started to get rough, the prayers just didn't work, which again was a catalyzing factor in getting them to start questioning. And other people had experiences going abroad, where they just lived in other cultures, experienced other religions, which again caused them, I think, you know, one great story was a guy who was a strongly believing Mormon, but he was a great piano player and organ player, so he was asked to play in various churches of all kinds of denominations. Just they would hire him out to play during their services.
That's,
and
like, said, damn.
You know, yeah. After you start hearing, you know, this congregation says, well, they've got the answer, and then this one says, well, we've got the answer. No, we've got the answer. He goes, when you start hearing that every week, you know, year after year, you start to think, wait a minute, you know, maybe nobody has the answer.
You also include the story of William Lobdell, whom we've interviewed, who was at our convention in Seattle, who said the primary reason for him rejecting his Roman Catholic background was when he was interviewing, as a reporter, victims of the sexual abuse by clergy.
Absolutely. I have a section called Malfeasance of Religious Associates, and a lot of people talk about, you know, the youth pastor having sex with one of the girls in the youth group, or the priest that, you know, burns the kids' Dungeons & Dragons game, or the sexual abuse scandal, I think, turned a lot of people off nationally. And there's no question that sometimes people experience one woman whose parents were Jehovah's Witnesses and they refused to give a blood transfusion to her dying brother. I mean, sometimes it's just the kind of wickedness, evilness, hypocrisy of religious leaders or even co-religionists that gets people upset. And that related to, actually, you mentioned politics earlier, and I certainly found that as well. A lot of people talked about the battle over gay rights, women's rights, war in Iraq. I mean, there were a lot of people who just simply disagreed with the kind of conservative Christianity they were raised in for political reasons.
In science.
Sorry?
In science, too. Stem cell research and...
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. And prayer in school. All these issues, and just even, you know, fair taxation. Others talk, you know, sex came up a lot. I had some people say that, you know, they wanted to have sex, and you know, their religion was telling them no, and they just kind of had to choose. Phil, we have to let people read
your book to get the rest of it, because we're running out of time.
Sorry, we are talking with
Phil Zuckerman, Faith No More, Why People Reject Religion, Oxford Press. Go get it and read it, and thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Phil. We also want to thank Dave McCann, our engineer and producer, and Buzz Kemper, our announcer. Go to ffrf.org/radio to hear archives and the podcast.
Join us at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021 for more information. And tune in next week for more rational radio, blasphemous broadcasting, and we hope you'll do your bit to educate the public about the secular roots of our country and the importance of secularity.
Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday.